All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are going to be talking about To Dust. This is an episode we recorded back when it was in theaters. It was only in theaters for a couple of weeks, so we decided to hold on to it for the VOD release. And it is finally out on VOD, and we are really excited for people to finally be able to see this movie. Because, you know, with the limited release, I don't think a lot of people really got to see it in the theaters. And honestly, this is one of my favorite movies of the year so far. It's from director Sean Snyder, and it's about a Hasidic Jew whose wife dies, and he's having real problems dealing with trying to imagine what is going to happen to her actual body when it is buried in the earth. And it's very weird, very dark, but also very funny. And he seeks out the help of a community college professor played by Matthew Broderick in a very ridiculous role. But he seeks him out to help him, you know, figure out what's going to happen to the body. And they kind of go on this journey to learn about decomposition together. So it's a very, very unique movie. And Chris Cranock joins me for this one. He's been on the show a bunch of times. And he's actually the one who brought this movie to my attention. So after I went out and saw it and loved it as much as he did, we absolutely had to do the episode. So if you haven't seen To Dust, you should watch it. It's available now on VOD. And I also want to remind you to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. And also make sure to join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, a movie discussion group. We recently renamed it. I wanted to have a separate name from the actual podcast. So, you know, you can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. So with all that said, let's jump into the conversation about To Dust. All right, so back on the podcast, we got Chris Cranock. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Always glad to have you here, man. And this is a movie that was totally not on my radar until you recommended it, so thank you very much for that, because I love this movie.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, the thing is, you know, I'm so aggressive as you know, as you are and as the community is, about trying to see these little movies that pop up.
Yeah.
And I'll be perfectly honest, I had no idea about it at all. I had never heard of it, and all of a sudden it popped up on like my Fandango app, and I was like, okay, well, that sounds like all the makings for a movie I'd like.
Right.
So I'll go see it, and I just went to go see it immediately, and I loved it, and then I was like, you have to see this. So yeah. I'm happy that you went out and saw it too.
No, absolutely. This movie has so many of the things that I like, from just the weirdness, the awkwardness, the creepiness, the dark comedy, the Jewish mysticism. I love all, yeah, everything in this. I mean, it's just so, it's such a weird and unique movie. It's so much fun.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I liked about it most, is that it really was weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the thing, is like, it's almost easy to be weird, but it's really hard to be weird and good.
Right.
And it somehow didn't let its weirdness overwhelm the movie.
Especially with a concept that, like, as soon as you start to describe it, it sounds like you're like setting up a punchline for a joke that's gonna be like one note joke, and it's never gonna go anywhere.
Right.
But yeah, no, I mean, I feel like this movie had stuff to say, it had a reason to exist, and it's It was definitely a success in my book.
Unique film. Probably one of the most, I mean, it's still early in the year, but it's definitely the most unique movie I've seen so far.
Sure.
And yeah, I kind of transitioned from, like, in the beginning, I was like, okay, yeah, like, I appreciate this movie. But then by the end of it, I was like, I love this movie. I really, truly enjoyed it. So yeah, it was a strange film.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, why don't we jump into puzzle pieces? And so the first puzzle piece for To Dust, what do you got?
All right, so speaking of weird, being on the weird thought bubble there, I'm going to have to go with Eraserhead.
Okay.
So this is a David Lynch classic. It was his debut feature film from the late 70s, 1977, kind of a cult hit from the Midnight Movie era, which, you know, kind of put it into the public consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole film felt very Lynchian,
mm-hmm,
and it felt particularly like Eraserhead with some of its dream imagery, where the character in To Dust is kind of having dreams about his wife, you know, what's happening to her corpse.
Yeah.
And there's almost like a stop motion animation quality to these dreams. And this is, to me, this is straight out of the animation inside the early short films of David Lynch that predate Eraserhead. And then are used in Eraserhead.
Right.
I mean, the thing is, it's arguable if they're dream sequences in Eraserhead or if they're waking life sequences. You know, there's a lot of crossover in that film. But I mean, just the kind of grotesqueness of the animation and the style really helped to give the whole film a Lynchian vibe.
Yeah.
And so I was really reminded of Eraserhead right from the get-go. And then, like, just like there's one shot in particular where they're like, it's a slow kind of push in to this like circular orb of light, and it was, and I was like, that is Eraserhead. It was like that, totally. Was, you know, from that moment. So, and all in a good way. I loved it.
I'm glad you brought Eraserhead up, because I couldn't quite think of the perfect movie that uses stop motion animation in that way to use. So I'm glad you brought this one to the forefront here. I mean, I was starting to think of some like early MTV sketch animation things that they used to do and whatnot, and just some of the other weird animation type things like that. I was kind of Googling some examples, but I wasn't quite finding one that that I wanted to use. So I'm glad you brought this one to the table.
Large Marge from Pee Wee's Big Adventure, which I still have nightmares about. Probably that's the most terrifying thing. That's scarier than anything David Lynch ever created, was Tim Burton's Large Marge. Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, something like that. But yeah, this Eraserhead has such a, like, one of the things Eraserhead succeeds in most is being atmospheric. You know what I mean? It's such a bizarre and surreal movie that if you don't submit to its style, if you don't submit to its atmosphere and its tone, then I mean, you won't have a very fun experience, because that's really what, that's the meat and potatoes of it, more than plot or character. You have characters like Mrs. X and things. You know, these are just kind of these broad artistic ideas. So if you don't enjoy the atmosphere, then that's the end of the movie, in my opinion. You
know? Sure.
So when I think of To Dust, there's so much more. It's more of like a contemporary plot-driven story with great character development, and yet there's all this like Lynchian, you know, atmosphere kind of snuck into it.
Yeah.
And it really is creepy. I mean, the movie is, like you said earlier, it's funny, it's dramatic, it's scary. Like, there's all those things wrapped into one, which makes it so unique.
Yeah.
But the scary elements, I think, kind of call back onto a Lynchian quality.
And those scary elements, they're so appropriate for that feeling of just, like, scared of, like, what happens to the body after death, which is the theme of the movie and whatnot. And so it's like it kind of mirrors it, like the weirdness and darkness of the movie itself mirrors that feeling of not knowing what's happening to his wife, like him not knowing what's happening to his wife. And I just thought that was really cool too, the way they did that.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like a first, I don't know if it's a first time director, it might be his first feature film or his second feature film, I'm not sure, but for someone who's relatively new to the game, I think he took a big risk with telling a story like this.
Yeah.
Had all these different and sometimes conflicting things and merged them together beautifully for this movie.
Yeah.
There's, you know, it's funny. There's not that huge chasm of between horror and comedy that one would first think. They're both like the most ridiculous of the genres. Mm-hmm. Comedy is silly, and sometimes horror is silly.
Sure.
You know, so they actually are fairly close. And sometimes when horror movies are most successful is when they don't entirely take themselves too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're going to laugh at me, but even in The Shining, we have the guy dressed up in a bear suit blowing a guy. Like, there's all kinds of weird little surreal comedy in The Shining. Jack Nicholson's performance is kind of comedic in a way. So yeah, they live very closely together. But I will say that I haven't laughed at like a scary movie as hard in a while as To Dust.
Sure.
I was creeped out legitimately and then laughed out loud. And that is a really weird, that's a weird thing to be able to get both so strongly. Anyway.
That's awesome. I love that description. I think that's great. Before I move on to my first puzzle piece, I was just going to give myself a quick plug here because while I was searching for stop motion animation, dark, creepy, weird stuff, I found my Back into the Dark video listed as one of the best ones.
Well, that's
like,
awesome.
I was like, holy shit, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's a nice company to keep. Creepy company. I like it.
Exactly. That's cool.
Well, I'm going to go with my my most obvious one up front, which is the Coen Brothers' A Serious Man, which also has that Jewish setting, deals with that Jewish mysticism, has a really dry sense of humor, and just dealing with that feeling of incompleteness despite having the spiritual angle, just not being able to really tie everything together into your own life. And I just thought that was so interesting. Also, Dybbuk's.
The Dybbuk!
Come up, which I don't know how this is possible. I didn't know about Dybbuk's growing up. I wish I did, because they would have worked their way into some of my songs and stuff. But Dybbuk's are, that's a great word.
Well, it's funny. I wrote something recently where I made a joke where a gentleman, this is a very weird thing, it's going to be hard to fully understand, but a character observes someone and mistakenly thinks they're a rabbi, and they're not a rabbi. And the first guy says, "Well, you know, I should tell you before we start talking that I'm an atheist." And the person who's misconstrued as a Jewish rabbi says, "Most of the Jews I know are atheists. It's really about community."
So true.
I feel like most of the Jewish people I've met in my life have been secular Jews that are involved in the community. And so, yeah, the culture maybe doesn't come up.
Yeah.
This dybbuk, this almost the probably one of the most, you know, supernatural elements of the faith. Is probably left on the doorway.
I went to Sunday school every week up until my bar mitzvah. Oh, wow. I didn't learn a thing. Like, you know what I mean? But I'm sure that's true for most faiths. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I didn't learn anything.
You're only seeing a fraction of what's going on there.
I learned the words, and that was the end of the story.
Yeah, you know? Serious Man's on my list too.
Yeah.
I was going to say, so it was on my list. I was mentioning it because of the Dybbuk thing.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Because for Serious Man, for me, it was the first time I was introduced to a Dybbuk.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the idea immediately. I was like, okay, we have basically a Jewish zombie.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm into it. So I really enjoyed that. And I think that they I like that they incorporated the Dybbuk lore into the story of To Dust through the children.
Yes.
That they were uncertain about if their father is possessed by the spirit or if he himself is a Dybbuk, which essentially is kind of like a spirit that lingers. It's almost like a ghost and a zombie kind of combined.
Sure. Yeah.
And they typically are like Hasidic, you know, type Jewish people. So it's really interesting, weird myth.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite scenes of To Dust is when they're speaking to his foot. While the father sleeps, and they're trying to get the Dybbuk out. They're just like, "Got it, get out, Dybbuk!" They're like yelling at his foot. And you know, it's funny because the movie is a conflict of faith film. I mean, you know, in a lot of ways.
Oh yeah,
it's not necessarily the one of the most obvious things. You know, it's not like advertised as that. But the fact that it seems, I mean, I'm not Jewish, so as an outsider, what it seems, not being very educated, that the Hasidic faith is fairly strict and you know has these very kind of clear guidelines.
Sure.
And then from what I have learned after the film is that they're pretty private about the burial process and what exactly happens.
Yeah.
And that's like the launching pad for the entire film of like this guy, he wants this kind of secular knowledge that his faith doesn't provide him. And it's not that he's really doubting the faith, which I think is an interesting slant. It's not that he's kind of losing the faith.
Yeah.
It's just that he's reached a point in his life where the faith isn't providing him enough.
He needs more. Yeah.
And that's a much more interesting slant on it, I think, and maybe more realistic than just like, well, to hell with this faith.
Yeah.
I'm just going to abandon it.
You know, right.
And that's a story that's, you know, interesting in its own right. But this was even more interesting to me because it was more nuanced. And yeah, I was like, well, what if you had no access to that information? It would probably drive you to the plot of this movie.
Right.
So Serious Man was definitely on it, and because I don't remember a more Jewish film than a Serious Man.
It's so true. Yeah, that's another thing. Both of these movies mine so much comedy out of Jewishness, you know. And there's really not a lot recently that does that. At least not in this way. I mean, it might be like a neurotic Jew or something like that. But you don't get out of the actual Jewish faith and Jewish customs and stuff like that. And it does it so well.
Yeah, it was real quick before we move on. I kind of went back recently and watched Seinfeld again. And I was just so, you know, blown away by how brilliant it is. I always thought it was, of course, but you see it again, you're like, wow, this really is as good as you thought it was. And I was watching a documentary about it, and I remember the NBC executives had this concern that it was too Jewish. And it's funny because, like, you know, Seinfeld revolutionized television and became so a part of our culture, and all these words and idioms were in the lexicon. And we owe a big part of American identity to the Jewish culture. And it's not really celebrated that way. It's not really looked at through that lens.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to see movies like A Serious Man and Now To Dust, where we get more insight into this culture that is idiosyncratic and strange and beautiful and funny, you know, and it's just really neat. So yeah, I definitely think a movie like To Dust is a direct descendant of a movie like A Serious Man,
which
was only made because they won the Academy Award a year and a half earlier.
And they were able to make something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So I think Roger Ebert said, you know, this is the kind of movie you make regarding A Serious Man after you win an Oscar.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only movie that, you know, when you can get it made.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's, I mean, they're both little gems, and they gave really unique insight into a wonderful culture.
You know, real quick, I wasn't going to go in this direction, but just to expound upon that, I think this is a perfect example of when people say that movies without Netflix won't get made, like these kind of movies. Mm-hmm. We just saw this one in the theater, so checkmate.
Yeah, all these movies are still getting made. Yeah. They're getting smaller. They're getting on smaller budgets. I mean, there's a reality to that. But
absolutely.
The thing is, that's honestly, I don't think it's any different than when True Lies was getting made in the 90s.
It's always been this way. Yeah. There's always been indies that only get smaller theatrical runs. That's all I want, people.
Yeah.
That's
thing
all
is,
I
if want. The Coens are making movies, if Alexander Payne is making movies and getting them in theaters, then there's some hope that these small little movies that are unique. I mean, say Ron Perlman was a producer on To Dust.
Yeah, that's right.
And
I saw his name in there.
Yeah, so there are actors and there are producers out there that care about passion projects.
Yeah.
I mean, Vox Lux was another passion project
where,
you know, Natalie Portman and Jude Law came on as executive producers and helped get the film made and get it out there. So really, I mean, the hope is that people that want to do good work.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there are people in the system that want to do good work and they're going to go make pet pop projects and you know it is going to happen, but it's Netflix is a threat, but it's not the end all be all.
Sure, absolutely, you know? So what's your next puzzle piece?
I'm gonna go with a movie called Down by Law, which is a Jim Jarmusch film, one of my all-time favorite movies. For a couple reasons I'm gonna mention this movie, because the first reason is kind of the tone, which Jim has a way of making very slow movies. They don't rush. They're going in no direction in particular. And Down by Law is that way. It kind of lingers and it's paced kind of strangely, especially to modern audiences. But it's full of rich characters and it's also has kind of an interesting cockeyed plot. So Down by Law, it's about three guys in New Orleans that all end up in the same prison cell for a variety of reasons. And they're John Laurie, the kind of acid jazz musician, Roberto Benigni, the Italian comedian, and Tom Waits, which I think it's his acting debut, if not one of them, maybe close, one of his first films. And so it's these really weird people stuck in this room together, and they all break out.
Right.
So the plot, I mean, doesn't have that much to do with it, but just the idea that it has this little premise, and these wonderful characters, and this weird kind of dark sensibility, and this slow plotting pace. I think this movie owes a lot to Jim Jarmusch in general. And then another reason why I really think that Down by Law fits best is because the Tom Waits.
Mm.
Because the very opening song of To Dust is a Tom Waits song.
That's right,
Off his Frank Wildyear album, which I'm a huge Tom Waits fan, so I knew the song, and I knew which album it's from and things. So it was really fun to be like, oh, wow, that's a unique song that we're not going to hear in movies every day. That's really obscure Tom Waits song, not like one of his Rod Stewart covered, hits, but this song called Blow Wind Blow off his semi-obscure album from the 80s that is like one of his least admired. So it's really kind of interesting to hear that. And that's the thing is like, when you mention people like David Lynch, when you name people like Tom Waits, there's this kind of cultish following about those people.
Sure.
It's like, you see someone with a Tom Waits shirt and you're like, that guy's cool. Like, he's like, it's like you're like in this secret club. Growing up, I mean, it's different now as an adult, but growing up, when you first discover Tom Waits and you first discover David Lynch, it feels like a true discovery. You're like now in this cool group of people and everyone else is an idiot. And that kind of, that magic kind of fades away as you get older. But there is this intense feeling that you're into something unique.
Sure.
And so when I heard that song, combined with the opening visuals of the movie, I thought, these are that type of people. Like that, they're this little, they really appreciate the niche. They appreciate the indie, the underground, the things that not everybody knows. And I almost felt like it was a movie made for us, relics of those weird little groups that we hung on to so intensely growing up.
That makes sense.
So that's kind of like that. Those are, I feel like they're like me. This is a movie I would have made.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
My sensibilities are similar. So I think Down by Law, excellent film, sparsely made, very simple, about friends, about people growing together. and very similar.
Yeah, going back to that, to like the main movie, Down by Law, I think I can't remember who it was, some screenwriter that said like one of his favorite things about screenwriting is coming up with these characters and then just seeing what they end up doing, mm-hmm. you know, once they start writing. This feels like that kind of a movie where it's like, you know, you've got this schlubby college, you know, community college professor, and you've got this Hasidic Jew, and what would they do together, you know? And, yeah. And the story comes from there. It's just such rich characters.
Yeah. I mean, it's the classic odd couple formula, you know what I mean? But it's taken to its extremes. I mean, this is the weirdest odd couple I've seen in probably a long time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it makes perfect logical sense of why they'd actually get together.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I think, but...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
but it's strange, yeah. I mean, how would Tom Waits and Roberto Benigni end up in the same prison cell?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, there you go, right? So...
Well, I'm going to continue with another odd couple.
Go ahead.
And that is the couple in Swiss Army Man, which is another very strange, offbeat movie that came out of this time in cinema right now, yeah. which is, there's not a lot coming out that's this weird. And it, not only because of the weird couple, but also the offbeat tone. And then the parallel kind of continues along with the issues of mental health, I think, mm-hmm. But in a different way, whereas in Swiss Army Man, he's clearly... you know, it's kind of like delusional and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And this, it's more of grief-based mental mm-hmm. health issues. But right. But you're still dealing with characters who are having a real tough time of the world, you know? And
related to death.
Yeah, and related to death, absolutely. And this friendship that arises helps them through a really difficult time that has come about because of death. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think both movies, in a way, are about grief. I think that Swiss Army Man's more ambiguous as to where, you know, what...
Sure.
How did he end up here and what's the situation? It's kind of even more surrealist. But I feel that they both deal with grief. And then To Dust, I think, more pointedly deals with grief.
Sure.
You know, that movie's really about grief. And absolutely. What, and what it pushes us to. And it's bold to make a comedy about grief.
It is.
That's a tough thing to do.
A horror comedy, kind of.
Yeah, horror comedy yeah. about grief. That yeah. sounds like, yeah, where's my ticket? You know, yeah. It's like, you know, I hope people aren't like, what the hell? And then, yeah. you know, go see it. It's really something special. But yeah, no, I agree. I actually almost included that on my list as well. I think it passed my brain, but sure. I didn't write it down. But I should have, because it's a great one. Yeah, both to do with corpses, both yep. to do with... kind of this unlikely friendship in the face of death.
Some weird animation parts yeah, and whatnot.
Yeah, that's true. They actually yeah. share quite a bit.
Yeah.
I was very fortunate. I was able to, I attended a filmmaking summit, and the filmmakers of Swiss Army Man were there.
The Daniels.
And I had an opportunity. Yeah, the Daniels, exactly. They started on YouTube. They're like YouTube sensations, yeah. you know. And so we both started at the same time with like the 5D Mark II boom with that, you know, the Canon camera boom, where all of a sudden we could, you know, make... quote-unquote cinematic-looking stuff for like $3,000.
Sure.
So we had a lot to talk about, and they were very sweet and sweet guys that were very sensitive. You know, they were the movie, the Swiss Army Man, is very silly and gross and ridiculous, and definitely something that comes out of like the YouTube generation. But it's also very sweet and sensitive, and sure. has a lot to say. And they are like that. They're very sensitive and very perceptive people.
It seems like they would be.
Yeah, they were very very kind and very very open and. They wanted very communicative. They wanted to discuss, you know, things, and that was what, you know, you could tell they were passionate about it, and that at least, you know, kind of bled into their film. And I definitely think that To Dust must have been made by really passionate people. Oh, a movie like yeah. that doesn't get made without a true curiosity.
Yeah, yeah. Curiosity is a great word for it.
Because I don't know really what happens to a dead body.
No.
I do now.
Never really thought about it before, but here we are, you know.
I mean, the thing is, that's the other thing, is that someone else's death often is a mirror for our own demise. You know, the clock's ticking, you know, and we do a great job of ignoring that fact every day. But, you know, when someone else dies, it does confront you with your own mortality. And especially when a loved one dies, I think that you worry, you know, you're like, because I mean, I'm an atheist, so I don't, you know, I think they're just in the ground and that's that.
Yeah.
But, and that adds, to me, that's comforting. That yeah. it gives me a certain solace. But for people of faith, if I'm trying to be as empathetic as possible and put myself in other people's shoes,
mm-hmm.
I would be confused being a person of faith. Yeah. I would be frightened for my loved ones. And so I really felt connected to the story of To Dust because, you know, I wanted to know, I wanted the mystery to be solved, and the way the character did. But yeah. I just knew that there was never going to be a true satisfactory answer. So that's interesting. I forget who said it, but they asked a filmmaker. They said, did you find the answers? And he said, no, they don't have any answers, and that's why the questions are so interesting.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the movie.
Absolutely. What's your next puzzle piece?
I'm stick with my Tom Waits thing here. I'm gonna make a movie. A movie called Wrist Cutters, a love story. You remember this one?
I do. I did see that a long time ago.
Yeah, it's weird. It wasn't great. Yeah, I didn't love it. It was all right, but it had Tom Waits in it, and that helps a lot. You know what I mean, that's good. But Wrist Cutters is kind of a supernatural movie about suicide, where they like cross over, and there's kind of like Tom Waits is like. Kind of like a guide, and then there's kind of like Dante parallels and stuff, so it's a little bit more surrealist than To Dust. But it's funny, when I read about To Dust briefly, I just like looked up a really fast synopsis before I went to go see the movie, and it had something, it described something like they were going on a journey like into hell. And I don't know who wrote it that way or where I read that, but I was expecting something more literal, something that was like something where they were going to hell. And it was not that. It was a journey totally in our world.
Sure.
I imagine made possibly from a secular viewpoint. I don't know if the filmmakers were particularly spiritual or religious, I don't know. I mean, it's just total speculation.
I would imagine they grew up around it, but maybe weren't in it themselves.
Yeah. Because they were more objective about it. Yeah. I mean, they're coming from an objective secular mindset, I think. I don't know. But so when I looked at Wrist Cutters, I think the subject matter obviously is connected for death and things of that nature and the journey element to it, but also too, kind of like more nuts and bolts, like the pacing of the movie. Like Wrist Cutters is kind of a oddly paced movie, and it's not like wildly laugh out loud funny, but it is a comedy. So these kind of weird jokes and zingers come along and the movie kind of plods about. And so I saw the similarities from that as well into To Dust, which is, I think, a more successful attempt at that type of, structure, that type of pace. Because at first, in fact, I mean, I'll just be honest, at first I was like very uncertain about how I felt about To Dust because it was paced kind of strangely, and some of the jokes didn't quite land, and I was like, is this funny, is this not funny, like how do I feel about it? And before I tried to intellectualize it, I was like, okay, well, let's just submit and see the movie and see what happens. I try to always stop myself before I make any judgment 5 minutes into the damn movie, you know what I mean? It's hard to resist sometimes. I don't like this, and then you're like, wait a second, let's give it a break here. But that's, I kind of like, I was like, oh, this is kind of a weird pace here, I don't know. But then it ended up, I think, really working. And Wrist Cutters, it worked less so. But a similar kind of pace. Slow, plodding, kind of methodical, with this kind of dark string of humor. And I think To Dust was just more successful in its humor as well.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm just trying to remember Wrist Cutters. It was so long ago. And the one thing I really like vividly remember about that movie is that there was like a string of time for like a year or two where anytime you turned on demand, it was like the first thing you'd see when you turned it on.
Yeah. It was like Shawshank Redemption on TNT.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, it's one of those movies that like probably didn't get a big theatrical release, but they put it on demand. They played the crap out of it.
All over.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, my next puzzle piece has to do with the main character Shmuel's. Is it Shmuel? I think it's Shmuel.
He calls him Shmuley.
Yeah, Shmuley. But yeah. with his with his search for the answers, which is what we've been talking about this whole time. But it's The Fountain from Darren Aronofsky.
Oh, one of my favorite movies.
I love The Fountain. Yeah, and it's just that search for answers that is just impossible and just really kind of drives you to the edge of, going crazy. And,
to burying a pig?
Yeah. To burying a pig.
Yeah.
To stealing a pig, naming the pig. And
and then forcing Matthew Broderick to kill it.
Poor Matthew Broderick.
I know, man. I'm so happy he decided to do this movie.
I know, me too.
I'm like, he probably got that script and was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. I'm not doing anything.
Yeah. What am I doing?
Just hanging around.
I used to be Ferris Bueller. No, I love it.
Yeah. But the Fountain is a movie that I absolutely love as well. And it's like, you know, anytime I could bring it up, it's, you know, it, and I, it was probably the first piece I thought of other than A Serious Man, just because, you know, just watching this poor guy, like, just really like struggle with these questions and trying to find a way to reconcile, you know, death for himself, you know?
That's true. I mean, it's just such an underappreciated movie, The Fountain. It is. And Darren Aronofsky, he's such a hard filmmaker to put your finger on, which is why I think like some of his movies, like, go unnoticed. Like, he made Rec Room for a Dream. He followed that with The Fountain. He followed that with The Wrestler.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? And then he did Black Swan. Then he did Noah.
Yeah.
God, I love Noah. But anyway, so, yeah, so he's a really bizarre, off-the-wall type of film director. He takes a lot of risks. I don't even like all of his movies, but I just appreciate what a risk they are all the time, that they're different and
yeah,
that he has something to say. So I really appreciate him as a filmmaker, even more than I like him. And although I do like a lot of what he does. And, you know, it's funny, yeah, it's just a kind of an underpraised movie, but definitely connected. And also, real quick, I wanted to mention, because you said Serious Man again, I almost forgot something to say with A Serious Man.
Sure.
Which is that, I mean, this is something I think is directly from A Serious Man. In that film, we get Jefferson Airplane, right? Mm. We get that, we get this 1960s music.
Yeah.
We get lyrics repeated. We get the song on the soundtrack. It's kind of like this weird clashing of cultures, right? We get like the hippie movement, which is kind of seeping into this more traditional Jewish life.
Yeah.
And then we have the ultimate extreme of that with the Hasidic Jew in this film, in Tedeschi, I mean. But then you also have Jethro Tull.
Yeah.
Which the Matthew Broderick character is obsessed with, not necessarily obsessed with, but a fan of.
Yeah.
Likes to burn one with you too.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I think there's really a close parallel that was either consciously or subconsciously inspired by A Serious Man,
yeah,
with like that juxtaposition.
You know what my favorite part about the Jethro Tull in this was, is how that song was playing through the whole thing and they'd never bring it down in the mix or anything. It's just like you're in this room and Jethro Tull's just blasting like in the room.
Exactly.
While he chokes
out a pig.
Yeah, while he chokes out a pig.
Yeah, and that was one of the that scene reminded me of, this is not a puzzle piece or anything, but like this, just when I watched that scene of him choking out that pig and listening to that song, I was like, okay, this is my James Franco playing Britney Spears on a piano like scene of this year. Because I remember watching Spring Breakers and he's playing Britney Spears and then all dancing around with like ski masks and machine guns. And I was like, well, this is the weirdest and best scene I'll see this year. There's not going to be a weirder scene than this.
Right.
I'm just going to suck it in. And then when I watched Matthew Broderick murder a pig to Jethro Tull, I was like, well, here's my James Franco playing Britney Spears scene.
Yeah.
Suck it in. Breathe it in. And so there you go. That's it. When you can pull a scene off like that, then you've done something.
Yeah, yeah.
That's special. Hard.
That's special.
That's special. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go on.
No, that's all I got. What do you got for your next puzzle piece?
there's another movie called, from 2009. This is a movie called Tickling Leo. This was a really kind of underseen indie movie. It's more of a drama about the Jewish culture. It's about a guy who kind of holds some secrets close to him from the Holocaust era, and then his three generations of this Jewish family kind of slowly uncover what happened in that time period. It reminds me of To Dust in the sense that, of course, it's about the Jewish faith and culture, mm-hmm, and it gives us more insight into that, which I think is rare and interesting. But also just the fact that it's kind of like this weird little indie movie. There's kind of something that they share that it doesn't follow the more traditional method of storytelling because it's indie.
Right.
You know, it doesn't have the big budget demands that we need to get $500 million, you know, on a theatrical run, you know, for it to be considered successful.
Sure.
So just a more unconventional approach to storytelling for Tickling Leo. I love the title Tickling Leo. It cracks me up kind of, even though it's not funny. And then it gives us more insight into that culture.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I hadn't heard of that movie. It sounds interesting.
It's good though. Yeah, it's really good. You check it out.
Right on. Well, cool. Well, my next puzzle piece, this one has to do specifically with Matthew Broderick's character, and that is Alexander Payne's Election.
Which,
I mean, I feel like his character could be Jim McAllister grown up 20 years later after getting run out of town, you know?
I think so.
Yeah, that this could be his new identity that he has started in his life as a community college science teacher, not a very good one.
Right.
And just, but he's got that exact same schmucky energy.
Yep.
And it for someone like myself who absolutely loves that movie.
I love Election. Me too.
So good.
I'm a big Alexander Payne guy.
Yeah, I this feels in many ways, at least the Matthew Broderick stuff feels like a spiritual sequel to that. You know, obviously the rest of the movie is very different, but at least in the character wise, he's pulling from the same source, I think.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm not sure if that is the limitations of Broderick's range, or no, I'm just kidding. But I agree. I think thing with Matthew Broderick is like he peaked as like the coolest character that ever existed as a young guy,
right?
And then somehow he's been just so emasculated. I've never seen such a weird drop in persona before. Yeah. And you know, and I've never, that's, he's a really kind of an enigma. You know, he's really interesting of what his public perception.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying anything about him personally. I don't know anything about him. I'm sure he's just a normal guy, but just from how we've perceived him over time, is very odd and strange to me. And yeah, and I remember it being refreshing when I saw Election that it was in such a bold movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's kind of a ballsy film.
Oh yeah.
And so, yeah, no, I agree. When I saw him in this, I was like, okay, well, there's that character where it's like just this weird nerdy loser.
Yeah.
But he's really on the cusp of like losing it into dust. Like his opening scene, he like pushes the projector off the thing.
Yeah.
It's like, I've never seen such a, like, he starts at the basement in this film.
Yeah.
He starts, like, he has nowhere to go but up.
Well, that's what's so interesting, too, is that it's the other character who's having the crisis. But but he is clearly not in any kind of a good place to begin with.
No. Honestly, it was a step up for that character to murder a pig.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun.
At least he did something.
He did something. That was his Tuesday night.
Yeah,
and that shit was better than the previous Tuesday for that character. I feel that's obvious.
That's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, he's smoking weed. Is like his landlady's like very sound conscious. Like, don't raise the volume. He's living in fear.
In his very weird woman's robe.
Yeah, dude. There's a lot unexplained about the character.
Yeah,
there's a lot unexplained about that character.
Yeah,
and I also like the. I really bought the subtle transition where the Broderick character was now on board to go on this journey.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing is, like, as a screenwriter and as a filmmaker, you're like waiting for those beats because I know them. I study them. It's like, okay, I need to break this up so that this plays and this works. So I often have an academic approach to scripts because I know how they're structured. It's kind of like, I think I've said something like this before, but it's like a comedian that hears a million jokes. Like, when you hear the beginning of a joke, you almost know how it's going to work because just structurally you understand it. And so, like, it's really nice for me anyway, not that I'm like a master screenwriter, but it's nice for me to like buy those moves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I'm like, okay, starting out, I know that Matthew Broderick has to then be on board some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
That the whole first act is bullshit, that he's like, oh, I don't want to do it. And he's reluctant. He's going to want to do it.
Absolutely.
So I know that's coming. And I mean, so does most of the audience. I mean, no one's dumb. We know how these movies work. And yet when that moment comes and it's so organic and it feels real and it's plausible why his position would change. That was a nice thing about this movie. I really bought his interest. And I think it's because they laid that kind of groundwork, even though it was ambiguous, that this guy didn't have a lot going on. He's kind of at a weird place.
Yeah.
And so when he has like this excitement in his life, that's really why I think he does it. He does it for excitement purposes as well as sympathy.
Yeah.
I bought it. Yeah. And that was cool.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that statement. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, right on. What's your next puzzle piece?
So I'm going to return to something you said a little earlier, because I read a couple of reviews after the fact of seeing To Dust. And it kind of said something that I don't necessarily agree with, kind of. So let me stop my preamble here. It's a movie called Being There. And it's a great Hal Ashby movie. And it's basically about a mentally challenged or a handicapped character named Chance the Gardener. And he's never left this house. He's an adult man. He's never left a house, kind of a brownstone. And he was the kind of a live-in with a rich guy who passes away. And once he passes away, Chance just wanders out into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And all he's ever encountered through the outside world is television. So the movie functions brilliantly because it's a one-note joke. Everybody interprets Chance's stupidity as wisdom. Mm. So he says these things. He was a gardener at the place, and so he'll talk about gardening in a literal way, and they think he's making a metaphor.
Yeah.
And it goes all the way up to where he has this political influence and starts talking to the president, and it's like this hilarious chain of events where he just, you know, gets more and more ridiculous, and he keeps, you know, he keeps getting more and more misunderstood and misinterpreted.
Right.
And so what's unique, what's the same about To Dust, I mean, is that they're on this one path trajectory. They're like on this one note thing. But I don't know if it feels the same. Like you mentioned it earlier, I can't quite remember what you said, but it said that you're like, it takes this one note idea and transforms it. I think that was kind of the thesis of what you were trying to say. And I agree with that completely, because you're right. The plot's very straightforward for To Dust. It's like we don't really diverge much from the premise once it gets started. You're like, he wants to find out what happened to his wife. And then it's kind of clinical after that point. It's like, we need to get a pig. We need to get a live pig. We need to bury a pig. We need to check on it. Blah, blah. You know, it's really kind of a, you know, by the numbers plot.
Sure.
And yet, because it's kind of such an ingenious and unique and strange way to go about such a straightforward plot, it never feels one note.
Right.
You know, it is structurally just like being there is one joke. You know, it's the thing, you keep laughing because the joke just keeps getting amplified.
Yeah.
It's not a different joke. It's now there's just so much at stake.
Yeah.
There's so much more caked onto it.
Yeah, they're more in, there's more riding on them getting something out of everything they've been doing.
Exactly. Yeah. Every time Chance is misinterpreted by the next person up the rung, now there's more at stake if the secret is revealed.
Yeah.
If people find out that he's just this gardener, then oh my God, now there's a mountain as opposed to one misunderstanding. There's like 30 people that would be disappointed that would have to reevaluate the last month of their life. So the same joke works again and again and again and again.
Yeah.
And I feel like that To Dust has a similar momentum.
Right.
There's like more and more at stake every time they go down this rabbit hole of finding out what happened and take more and more extreme measures. So yeah, it's just kind of interesting. It's very simple, very straightforward, and yet it builds beautifully, and then, you know, it's funny. It's very funny.
That's a great one. And I'm trying to remember if I've ever actually seen Being There. I mean, I certainly know of it, and it's one of those classics that I probably saw a long time ago. But
yeah, Peter Sellers.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure I saw it a long time ago. But no, that's a great one though. I love what you're saying there about the continuing to build off that one thing, and it keeps gaining momentum and whatnot. I think that's really cool.
Yeah,
I like it.
Cool.
Right on. So I only have one more puzzle piece here. And this one I actually wrote down for you after I knew you were going to be my guest for this episode.
Yes.
And that is 2001.
Oh, Space Odyssey. Man, that is, I'm going to shut up. Tell me.
Here we go. So, okay, now this one is a little bit theoretical of a puzzle piece, okay?
Not shocked.
Yeah, so in theory, I imagine Stanley Kubrick is trying to answer big, unanswerable questions for himself with the movie.
Sure.
And the character of Shmuel is trying to answer questions that really nothing is going to answer anything for him. Even if he found the biological, what exactly is happening to the wife's body, that's not going to do it for him in any way, shape, or form. Even if he got an exact, specific scientific reason, it's really just grief when it comes down to it.
Right.
Nothing is going to fix that.
Right.
Nothing is going to fix the fact that his wife is gone. So yeah, it's that search for answers that really there's no answer there that's going to do anything for you. I feel like Kubrick is going for something like that with 2001. Obviously, there's so many ways to interpret a movie like that.
All of his films,
yeah.
Really.
But so that's one way that I looked at 2001 after I watched it, and that's a way that I look at this movie, at the main character's story anyway.
You've made me very happy, David.
There you go. I passed.
Well, no, the thing is, you know, and if you may, I add something to that.
Sure, please do.
So, I mean, you know, in a lot of ways, I think you're exactly right, because, you know, Stanley was another person that was, you know, on record as being a secular person. Didn't have, you know, didn't really have a strong religious influence in his life personally as he grew up and was an adult. And so we made 2001 A Space Odyssey. The film ends very ambiguously, but strangely, almost spiritually. You can interpret it that way. And, you know, the movie is really about man's tools surpassing man.
Sure.
It starts with our very first tool, the bone, there's visually represented by the pen floating through space, and then on our, of course, our amazing space stations, and then is epitomized by HAL, who's our greatest work yet, AI, who then eventually goes beyond our capability of control and tries to kill us for self-preservation reasons. And so the film follows a very logical pattern until the Stargate sequence, when we've reached beyond the answer. We've hit a wall.
Yeah.
When it comes to how much we can track and estimate what our potential is. So now we just end up in this surreal fast forward of life and huge philosophical questions shown in the very ambiguous artistic imagery. And it's because, how do you end a movie about trying to understand human origin and human potential?
Right.
How do you end a movie as abstract at its very core, you know, in a more logical way? You can't. There's right. not like, okay, oh, we turned off HAL. Well, then that's not very satisfying, is it? Yeah. Even though that's the most brilliant scene of the movie. for to take all the philosophical threads of that film and to tie them in a way that feels satisfactory, it had to be ultimately ambiguous. There right. could never be anything concrete. And so that's a really tight rope to a tight balance to control, is how sure. do I make something ambiguous and yet satisfying? And so, I mean, I think he achieved that. We still talk about it and discuss it and things like that. But I agree. I feel like, I mean, the thing is, it's called a space odyssey. And Even to Dust is this type of odyssey. It's kind of this journey.
Sure.
That's a theme, and that's a structure that I really respond to. I like characters that are like always on this mission and they're kind of discovering things. It doesn't have this three-act structure where characters from act one kind of come back in act three and help resolve. I often like establishing characters and letting them just explore a world until they come to some type of conclusion. And so To Dust is almost a very realistic, strangely, you know, real version of a 2001, and even in its structure.
Right.
So I agree completely, and I think it's a great thing to bring. I never thought of it, but I definitely agree with you.
Awesome. I like it. I'm glad you like that.
Yeah. That's it. I'm out too. So
that's it.
That's it.
All right. Well, then we got our finished puzzle here, and then we'll do any closing thoughts we had about the movie. So our finished puzzle includes Eraserhead, A Serious Man, Down by Law, Swiss Army Man, Wrist Cutters, A Love Story, The Fountain, Tickling Leo, Election, Being There, and 2001, A Space Odyssey. So, To Dust. I honestly would say this is probably my favorite thing I've seen this year. The year's still young, but yeah, I'm really happy that I got to see this in the theater. I'm glad we're doing this episode today. Do you have any other like closing thoughts about the movie itself?
Just that you should really seek it out. It's going to be one of those movies that's probably going to kind of go, you know, disappear into obscurity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something I'm noticing is fewer and fewer art house movies are getting Blu-ray releases.
Yeah,
it's just
yeah.
getting DVD and now just video on demand
DVD,
releases.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, see, if you can't see it in theaters, it's still playing in theaters. I believe it's still on my Fandango app, so it should be playing. If you can see it by the time this podcast airs, go and see it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really something special, be open to it. You know, this thing is, it might be about a culture that you don't particularly relate to or understand. That's the case for me. But as long as you keep yourself open, it's fascinating. It's an interesting culture. It's a beautiful culture. It's funny. The movie is frightening and silly and ridiculous, and it's a lot of things. It hits a lot of bases.
And maybe Matthew Broderick can be your entry point into that culture.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Sorry, Rabbi.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So good. He's like, I'm not the rabbi. And that's the thing is, you know, maybe be prepared for a couple wry smiles more than like belly laughs.
Sure,
you know what I
yeah.
mean? That's the thing is, you know, just go into it with an open mind and seek it out if possible. If you can't catch it in the theater, then go out and you know, purchase it online or buy it at a DVD or Blu-ray store, if those still exist. And yeah, just support it any way you can, because this is the type of movie that we should get more of each year. And it's just usually a small blip on the radar in the early part of the year.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, I'd love you to do some plugs. And also, you have anything you've watched recently that you'd like to recommend?
Oh, man, so much. So I've been like on a theater binge recently. I've had the opportunity to actually go. So I'll just do a fast list. Everybody Knows. You definitely go see that. Beautiful movie by the Iranian director of A Separation. Stars Penelope Cruz and Javier Bardem. Beautiful movie. I really liked Apollo 11.
Oh, I loved Apollo 11.
If you have a chance, go see it in IMAX. Truly a cinematic experience. Incredible. There's a movie called Never Look Away, which is about 3 hours and 10 minutes long. So if you're not like really into German history, maybe not. But I liked it. If you have maybe a lazy Sunday, go check it out. I thought it was very good. And then there's like one more on the tip of my brain that I saw.
It was Alita Battle Angel, correct?
Oh, that's what it was. Okay, yeah, it's my favorite movie so far this year. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. No. No, I think then it was last week was just To Dust. So yeah, just go see To Dust.
Yes, and that's a good recommendation.
If it's between To Dust and Alita Battle Angel, see To Dust.
Yes, I'll go with that. Even though I liked Alita.
Yeah, I was gonna say I thought that was like a neutral way to say that. So, but you would agree that Paris is the capital of France, right? Well, then good. We're back in agreement. We're back in agreement. I don't have too much to plug. I am still, of course, working on my film with the generous support of the Kubrick family and Douglas Milsom, the phenomenal cinematographer, of Full Metal Jacket. So that's a slow process, of course. I'm headed back to the UK soon to continue work on the film. I will be launching an official website soon for the film. It's called Madame X. It's going to be madamexmovie.com. Not up yet, but will be soon. So you can see about the film, read about it, see our cast and crew that we have so far, learn about the Kubrick's involvement, which is such an honor and such an insane thing. You could definitely learn about that. And then I'm also really writing and working on a television show called The Idiot, which hopefully is going to be on a streaming service sometime soon. So keep your eyes peeled for that. And it's all downhill from here. It's been a little slow right now coming out with the comics, but we are planning to shoot some episodes for a little comedy web series. So that's in the works. So just kind of keep your ear to the ground. I got some new stuff in the works, and it's all coming hopefully very soon.
Sounds good, man. Well, we'll get you back on here again to keep promoting them as they keep coming.
All right, I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for having me.
Right on.
Why didn't the three little pigs go in for some kind of flat share scheme?
Does Jesus get to choose which wine he turns it into?
Why don't Sims have the upper body strength to climb out of a swimming pool?
And does everybody really want to be a cat?
I'm Will Baker.
And I'm Alex Prescott.
And if you're the type of person that overthinks these deep philosophical questions, then Think to the Brink is the podcast for you.
From Disney characters to song lyrics, debates to social etiquette, tune in every week for your dose of paralysis by analysis.
All topic suggestions are welcome. If you can think it, we can overthink it. Think to the Brink. Available on all podcast platforms.
All right, so that does it for today's episode of Piecing It Together. And I included that ad for Think to the Brink because it is a podcast that I actually do listen to. I enjoy it quite a bit. And the way that these characters overthink things in this movie, it just seemed like a good fit. I really do hope you guys go out and watch To Dust. It is a great movie and deserves for more people to see it. That does it for today. I want to remind you all, as always, to please make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You can follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all these movies. And, that's enough stuff for you to do. We got a whole bunch more Piecing It Together coming up. So, just check out all those episodes. And, we got Avengers, we got so much stuff happening on the show. I really want to thank you all for listening because there's been a lot more listeners lately, and I really do appreciate it. So with that said, I guess let's wrap this thing up with a song, as we always do. And today for the show, because this was a very Jewish movie, I figured why not dig into my Jewish comedy rap group, Fakakta. This is a group that's kind of now defunct. We've ended the group as of now, but from our last album, You Took Us For Granted, there's a song on it called Bagel Jews, and it's about how we're Jews, but we're, we're not super Jewish. We're just kind of Jewish, but I figured it would be a good fit for an episode like this, so enjoy Bagel Jews, and we'll be back next week with more Piecing It Together.
MCFL in the house, y'all.
People think a Jew is a Jew is a Jew. Well, honey, that is so not true. It's like comparing apples and oranges.
killing chickens at Crown Heights. I'm driving and I'm rocking on a Friday night. On my way to a drive through for a bacon cheeseburger. You starting to get the picture, you're a real good learner. Netflix, HBO, and the silver screen. It's all the members of our tribe that's behind the scenes. No curls are hanging from the side of my face, but I got a lot of curls on my head and my nuts.
Jewish Dave is in the house, y'all. L-A-S-B-E-G-A-S. That's the way we do the heap call. And you'll find him at the deli.
All my homies in Alabama, Texas, Bible Belt. They think we're all rich and make a ton of gout. But there's a big difference they don't understand. They think we're all from some far off foreign land. That we all wear black and that we all have horns. And that we made Jesus Christ, we're a crown of thorns. But I was made in America. I don't know about you. We're not religious, just call us big. We're just Jews. Like you, we're big Jews. Bitches, let your hair down. All my bitches, let your hair down. Bitches, let your hair down. Ami Dog is in the house, y'all. G-O-A-S-T-C, the shining sea. That's the way we do the heap call. And you'll find him on the deck.
Right about now, you're about ready to blow up the spot.
Watch this. Watch this.
And all points west.